Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Did you ever read a book and think, if only my other half could read this, I'm sure it could change them and us? Well, my next guest has gone one step further and written that book for you. Philippa Perry, psychotherapist and agony aunt for The Observer magazine, has written the book you want everyone you love to read and maybe a few you don't. And Philippa joins me now. Good morning, Philippa.
Good morning, Claire.
You're very welcome to the programme. You've written the bestseller previously, The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read, and people might know you, of course, from Channel 4's Art Club during lockdown. And it seems, and it's generally acknowledged, that there will always be a need for help with relationships. But exactly why have you written this book and who is it aimed at?
This is for anyone who wants to improve all of their relationships. That's whether they're with close family or with colleagues or with strangers or friends, and of course your relationship with yourself. It's just something to make the best of your life with, really.
So that's interesting that you include your relationship with yourself, and really that's who you want to read this book. You want all of us to take this book and learn these lessons for ourselves.
I think so, yeah, because how we talk to ourselves, you know, if we're very strict and unkind to ourselves, we can use the same treatment on other people. So if we're actually kind to ourselves, we're usually kinder to others.
And can you explain what you say at the start of the book when you say, think of self-awareness as knowing where you are on a map? What does that mean?
Well, if you've got a map in front of you, but you don't know where you are on the map isn't much use. And so this book aims to make you more aware of your usual behavioural patterns, your usual way of reacting to your environment and to other people. Because when we know how we react, then we've got a choice about whether we do something about it, whether we carry on reacting like that or whether we decide to respond in a different way.
And do you know or suspect that many of us don't have that awareness to know where to start from?
Well, I know that I often don't have it. I know that I often just react, and then after a bit of thought, I think, maybe I could have done that differently. And this book, it will help us, give us the tools to know when to, it might be a good idea to say, give me a bit more time, I need to think about that, when to reflect and then respond rather than just react. Because when we just react, we tend to make assumptions about the other person, and quite often those assumptions are wrong.
Mm-hmm. Give us an example of that, of making assumptions about another person when we're facing a difficult situation in a relationship.
Okay, suppose there's two of you in a room, and you've had a difficult conversation, you're not quite sure how it landed, and the other person goes and the door slams behind them. Now, you might assume they slammed the door, but it might have just been a draft that slammed the door. So you say, did you slam the door, or was it a draft that slammed the door, rather than say, how dare you slam the door on me?
Yeah.
You know, we need to check things out.
You make that point that asking yourself why something happened, Philippa, is never usually very useful. The solution is normally in the how. What do you mean by that?
Let's say, why can't I get a partner? Maybe that's the question we're asking ourselves. If you ask yourself that question, it's so easy just to tell yourself a story in response. So you might say, I can't get a partner because all men are rotten, or something like that. And then there's nothing you do about it. But if you say, what am I doing in relationships that they're not lasting? How am I behaving in relationships? What are my normal patterns of being in a relationship? And then you might look at those and you think, oh yes, I do tend to go in very, very quickly. Maybe I'll think about that and take it more cautiously next time. So when you become aware of your regular pattern, how you normally behave, you've got a choice to do something different with it.
Is there a danger, though, that we veer into becoming too self-critical?
It's not about being self-critical. It's about experimenting. Like, I always respond like this. I'm going to experiment with responding like that instead. So when we know how we're doing something, then we've got the choice of whether we experiment or not. If we just stick with why, we just make up, we make stories up, and they don't really help us.
But I know you have people, though, who write to you in your column and they say, I'm no good at relationships. You know, that's a very difficult starting point, isn't it?
Well, that's a judgment, and judgments aren't usually very helpful. I think I'm no good at relationships could be interpreted as I don't know what I'm always doing that relationships go wrong. And this book would help you become more aware of what you're doing so that you have a choice about it.
Mm-hmm. This other question that you get asked by adults fairly often, how do you make friends? Isn't that interesting? I mean, we all know how to make friends. It's almost instinctive when you're a child. When you're an adult, it can be difficult.
When you're a child, you're sort of thrown into situations where you're with people all the time. So you don't have to think about what to say, because you're just with them and you just know how you feel with them. And actually, children are finding it difficult now to make friends because of the lockdowns. They didn't have this natural being thrown together. Some of them were sort of isolated just with their families for a year or so. So it's not that easy for even children to make friends now. But how you make friends is when you make a sort of connection with someone. And that's not necessarily to do with the words you use, but just how you feel when you're with another person.
And of course, we're all using social media. We're on our phones a lot more than we used to be. You know, we're working through technology a lot as well. Has that led to more isolation and less of an ability to make a human in-person connection?
The trouble with it is that it gives you just enough contact to think you're doing okay. So you feel a bit lonely, so you reach for your phone and you start to have a conversation on Facebook or something, and it sort of tides you over, but it isn't proper living body to living body connection. It's not like being in the room with someone. And because we have these little snippets, we tend to see each other less. I mean, I'm sad to say that young people meet up less with each other because they're always on social media having connections. And initially, I think parents thought this was absolutely great because they knew where their kids were. But actually, it would be much better for children to be out worrying their parents, but hanging out with their peers. And it's better for us to hang out with our peers too.
Do the children, the teenagers who behave like that and interact like that, do they worry about not having human or in-person connections rather?
I don't think they worry about it, but maybe they should worry about it. they just don't feel great. And it's because they're not getting enough person-to-person interaction, especially if, you know, they're doing more school and college online.
I was really interested in what you say about dealing with grief, and I know you get asked about this a lot too, because the person is gone. So it is impossible to deal with that grief and have that conversation with that person because they are not there. So things are left unresolved. But you say you can have that conversation.
Yeah, we do something in Gestalt therapy, which is called two-chair work. And it might sound a little bit, I know, odd, but you put two chairs in the room and you talk to the empty chair as though it's the person you've lost and you want to talk to. And then this is the clever bit, you change places and you talk back to your empty chair as though you are the person talking back to you. It can resolve things.
And is that satisfying for the person who is left behind?
Surprisingly, it is. And it can be, yes. I mean, I'm not saying you can do it in one session, but you might have to do it more than once. And it's quite good to do it with a witness to help you do it, to facilitate the process.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are grieving, part of what you are grieving is you've lost the person you were when you were with that person. So you've not only lost your mother or your lover or whoever it is, but you've lost the part of you were when you were with them. And it takes a long time for you to sort of grow a new part, as it were, to go round the what's missing in you. That's and I think we have to give that process time.
Yes, and you'd be speaking, I suppose, more so to people who are struggling with grief after a longer period of time has passed and perhaps can't move on or find that that grief is resurfacing a lot.
And I say to them, make friends with the grief. I mean, there's some people who are grieving their mothers who died like 30 years ago. And don't tell yourself off for having that grief. It is a part of you. And you can make friends with it rather than seeing it as an enemy. And I know that sounds a bit weird, but what you have to do is change your relationship to your grief so that it isn't eating at you.
Philippa, let's talk a little bit about arguments, because very usefully you have set out the type of arguments that we have in this book, and you've categorised them for us. And I think most people would be surprised that you can do that.
Yes, there's lots of different sorts of arguments. There's me right, you wrong, me good, you bad. And there's people that are frightened of arguing. So there's the conflict phobic. And there's another sort of argument, which I call fact tennis, where people store up the facts and throw them across the net at each other until somebody runs out of facts and the other person is deemed to have won. But the trouble is with that is that it's quite unsatisfying, and you've won maybe at the expense of someone you love very much. I'm not saying that facts aren't a part of it, but so often, say we're arguing about something where facts don't really come into it, such as where to go on holiday or what time to leave the house or something like that. And it's so much more about what people feel. And so it's so much more useful if you don't hide your feelings behind a fact. And there's also other things such as talking I statements and not you statements, and don't point a finger at someone, go you always, because that will make someone defensive. Mm-hmm. What I suggest for arguing is that we slow it right down, because arguments tend to be really quick, like a game of tennis, really. And if you slow it right down, and you can do this by when somebody tells you their point of view, you repeat back to them what they've just said very slowly. So you go, have I got this right? And say back in their words as much as possible what they've said. And when that other person feels really heard, they don't feel in such a hurry or so anxious, because they know they've been understood. So understand the other person's points, feed them back to make sure you've understood them, and so they know you understand. And then, and only then, you can go, and I wonder what you think of this being in the mix. Because then they've understood that you've understood. And by understanding them, you might even move your position a bit, and they might be more willing to move theirs. So then you're more likely to come to a compromise where there are no losers and winners, but you can both move forward. That's the idea anyway.
And you've taken the heat out of it, and you've taken that fast pace out of it as well, and perhaps the door, the door slam.
Yeah, so slow it right down.
Philippa, it's been so good to talk to you. The book is out today. It's called The Book You Want Everyone You Love to Read, and Maybe a Few You Don't, from Cornerstone Press. Philippa Perry, lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Claire.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.